Well, originally that was the title of the course, but that has in Ranjha. That was decided rather abruptly about 8 months ago or something. I didn't even know what I was going to do. So I could do that. But then I've thought it may be a little bit splayed out in the one sense. I can just tell stories which you can also get from the Krishna book or something like that. So I thought I would maybe unify it a little bit with some sort of theme, which also runs chronologically, sort of. But it doesn't just depend upon the Bhagavatam. So what I did is I took Vishnu's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and kind of summarized all that. And then based on that, discussed the bhakti in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm taking the people of Raja as the examples of different types of bhakti. Even then, it may be a little bit long, so I just kind of cut little bits out and took samples of Vishnu's realization of the different types of bhakti. So, therefore, what I will do is I will start with the Bhagavad Gita part of it, and then go on to the, which is also not only in the Bhagavad Gita, it's also in his commentaries on the Bhagavatam, as you will see if you get the printout. But this will give a nice summary of the Bhagavad Gita also, which everybody studies, and Bhakti Shastri has studied this also. So this is kind of convenient. I changed the title somewhat, at least on this thing here, and gave it the title of Krishna's Response to His Devotees. This is a general title, not only to the devotees, Krishna's response to everybody. Because the very nature of the Supreme Lord is his response. Supreme Lord is a person, and a person means he responds when another person interacts with him. And we call a person impersonal if he doesn't react when someone does something for him or does something against him or whatever. He's called impersonal. So, the basic nature of the Supreme Lord is his interaction with everything, with personalities in the spiritual world, personalities in the material world with all the jivas, and even with material energy. So, therefore I kind of based it on this idea of Krishna's response and interaction with the jivas. So, the basic principle is enunciated in one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that's the first verse in this outline, and that is Yeta Mam Prapadyate Tam Sadaiva Bhajamyaham Mama Manuvartante Manasya Karta Sarvasaha. Which literally means that Krishna is saying here that as, accordingly as you surrender to me, I respond. And all men follow my path. In other words, this is a rule. a rule of the creation. Or also in the spiritual world and in the material world that everybody follows. Jivas are conscious. And they have objects that they are conscious of. And particularly they become conscious of other living entities. And maybe even the Supreme Lord. Krishna is also conscious, and he's also aware of all the different jivas in the spiritual world and the material world. So accordingly, as they surrender to him, then he responds to each one. If they don't surrender, that is the response that Krishna gives to them. It's called non-surrender. And then there's a certain way in which he deals with them. And if they surrender a little bit, then Krishna responds in that proportion. And if a person responds, surrenders completely, then Krishna also responds completely. So in this way we'll get various types of responses from Krishna according to different types of persons. And according to the response of the person in the material world, if it's even spiritual, according to his way he interacts with the Supreme Lord, either partially, more, or completely, that will actually fix his spiritual destination, in which he eternally gets eternally situated with the Supreme Lord. So that's the basic idea here. So this is enunciated in this one verse. So Vishnu has written a purport here. I'll just read this out first. In whatever way they worship me, I also give them the fruits of their worship in a similar manner. That's his basic meaning of the verse, how Vishnu Chakravarti interprets the verse. Those who think that my birth and activities are eternal and having a particular desire for my respective pastimes worship me, they attain happiness. And I, because I am the Lord, I can do or not do or do anything. In other words, Krishna has the free will to do anything. But making them my associates, that is those people who worship Krishna voluntarily, with them I appear and disappear in this world at the appropriate time in order to give my birth and pastimes an eternal nature, favoring them at every moment, bestowing upon them the fruit of their worship, prema. So this is the response of someone who fully worships the Lord, and only the Lord. They become his eternal associates. Even when he performs his pastimes in this material world, they will always be with him. The Gyanis and others who surrender unto me, thinking of my birth and activities as temporary, and thinking of my deity forms as material, I throw those Gyanis again and again into the noose of Maya, with its temporary births and deaths, and bestow upon them the sorrow of birth and death, the fruit of their worship. So here, even though they are Gyanis, because they reject the nature of the Supreme Lord, that is that he has got form and qualities, etc. They think those are only material forms and qualities. Because they offend the Lord, they don't even get liberation. They end up getting born again and again in the material world. So this is the, as Krishna says, that you surrender unto me, I will reward you. So you don't surrender to Krishna, that's exactly what you get. A birth in the material world. Instead of going to the spiritual world, you end up in the material world. If you surrender completely to Krishna, you end up eternally with Krishna. But those Gyanis who accept the eternal nature of my birth and activities and consider my deity form to be Satchidananda and surrender to me for perfection of their jnana, I liberate those Gyanis since they desire the destruction of their gross and subtle bodies, and I give them the bliss of Brahman. I bestow upon them the desired result of their worship, the destruction of birth and death born from ignorance. So again, or avidya is ignorance, and the opposite of that is jnana, knowledge. So the whole idea of the jnani, this type of jnani, is that he wants to remove ignorance, and by removing ignorance, he gets moksha, liberation from birth and death. So, the previous jnani didn't get that, because he rejected the Lord and his form. So the jnani that actually wants to get and will achieve liberation from this material world is the Gyani who accepts the form of the Lord and does not offend it in any way. He understands what the Supreme Lord Krishna has a form which is spiritual, not material, and I respect that. In spite of that, he doesn't want to attain that relationship with Krishna. He'd rather merge into the Brahman. But nevertheless, he'll accept the form as a spiritual form. So he will get his reward. If he wants the Brahman, he will get the Brahman. He surrenders to Krishna a little bit by recognizing him as non-material, as a spiritual being. He doesn't surrender as the devotee surrenders and taking Krishna in his form as the final object of devotion. He doesn't do that. But he accepts the form at least. And his goal is to merge with God. So therefore, Krishna gives him that. That's his degree of surrender. He gets something. The other Gyani, he may have the goal of merging into the Brahman, but he rejects God. Therefore, he doesn't get anything. He has no surrender. Therefore, not only devotees surrender to him, but rather everyone, sarvasaha, all men, Gyanis, Karmis, Yogis, and worshippers other than the Devatas, and worshippers of other Devatas, they follow my path. Gyan, Karma, and other processes are all my path, since I am the essence of all those paths. So, not only Gyan, but then also karma and yoga are the same. If you don't recognize the Lord in karma or in yoga, you end up in the material world again. If you recognize the Lord, to a little degree at least, and respect Him, but you still want the result of yoga or of karma, then you will get the results. So people will worship devatas, they will also worship God and respect Him. They will get the results. They will, if they want to go to Svarga Loka, they can go there. The Lord will give them that. And if the yogi wants to get moksha also, and merge into God, then, but he also respects the Lord, then he will get that. But if they reject the Lord and offend the Lord, then they get nothing. They stay in the material world and suffer. So therefore, everybody follows the path of the Lord. Those that offend the Lord because they don't surrender at all, they also get a result. That is, they stay in the material world. That is their result. If you surrender a little bit with karma, then you get elevated in the material world. If you surrender with yoga again and you respect the Lord, then you get liberation. And if you surrender to the Lord with bhakti, that also has degrees. And accordingly, you'll get different results for that. So that's what I'll cover here. So Bhagavad Gita actually presents all of these different shades of surrender. With karma yoga, gyan yoga, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. And within these, there are different degrees of surrender. So we know in chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents karma yoga. And there are two distinct karma yogas also. Karma yoga, basically, we want to have material enjoyment. So the definition of karma yoga is we follow the rules, prescribed rules of scripture, and execute our duties of varna and ashrama. That's basically what karma yoga means. So there's two divisions here. One is the sakama, and one is the nishkama. So both of these are described in chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. So the sakama is represented by some verses near the beginning, like verse 10, sahayagya prajashishtra, parovacha prajapati, anena prasavisyadgam, esha vostishta kama duk. Brahma, having created the population along the sacrifice long ago, spoke, may you prosper by this sacrifice. May it fulfill all your material desires. In other words, it doesn't say anything about liberation or anything. It says you enjoy the material world, but you do yajna. Yeah? So you have to worship the Lord, but the goal is not to get liberation or go to Vaikuntha. It is simply to prosper in the material world. So this is called sakama karma. So he speaks like that for some verses. Then there is nishkama karma, offered to the Lord. So this is a higher level, and Krishna actually recommends this in Bhagavad Gita over the sakama karma. With yagya chak komanonya tar lokoyam karma bandana taratam karma kontiya mukta sangha samachara. So therefore, that's where he says mukta sangha. Translations. Without performing actions for the purpose of sacrifice, the people of the world are bound by their actions. O son of Kunti, perform actions for that purpose, freed from attachment to results. So this idea of being attached to the results or not being attached to the results, this is emphasized a lot in the Bhagavad Gita, not being attached to the results. So, of course, the objection is that if we do actions, we get bound up. So if you do karma yoga, you're doing actions, and then you get bound up in the material world. This is the normal conclusion. Action leads to bondage. So action which doesn't lead to bondage is action offered to the Supreme Lord. So Vishnu is called yajna. So when it says do it for the purpose of yajna, it is do it for the pleasure of Vishnu. So if you do your activities, prescribed activities, but you do them for Vishnu, not for yourself, but for Vishnu, then you're free from reactions, from bondage of this material world. So one does for the Lord with no desires for results, that's Mukta Sangha. No desire for results for yourself, then you are free from reactions. So if we do the regular Varnashram system, Karma Yoga, then we get bondage. We come back to the material world. Liberation is not promised. You can advance from Tamagun to Rajagun to Sattvagun. And if you're in Sattvagun and you continue in that way, you can stay in Sattvagun birth after birth. Or, if you're lucky, you go to Svargaloka. But that also is bondage, because then you fall back down to the earth and then you start again. So it doesn't give you liberation at all. But if you do the Nishkama Karma Yoga with no desire for results offered to the Lord, then the Supreme Lord promises this. You get free from bondage. However, this is a little bit of a, we can say, a little exaggeration in one sense, because it's not direct. Nishkama Karma Yoga only leads to the position of sattva, at which stage you've got to take another process, either jnana or bhakti or yoga. So in itself it's not complete. So all the processes therefore is considered inferior. It's not a direct process of liberation. It only leads to another process. So therefore it's inferior. Nevertheless, of course, Krishna also in the Bhagavad Gita emphasizes it a lot and keeps telling Arjuna that you must do karma yoga, whatever. The reason, of course, is that for most people it is practical, because everyone is attached to this material world. So he's putting Arjuna in the position of a normal person of this world. At the same time, we know that Arjuna is transcendental to the material world, but it's by the will of the Lord that he's put under the illusion of yoga maya of the Lord, for the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And at the end we see that the whole thing is clarified. So that is Sakama Karma Yoga and Nishkama Karma Yoga. These two things are prominent in the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna also discusses jnana, the process of jnana. Krishna Chakravarti defines jnana as the process of cultivating knowledge of Atma. That's the main goal, to understand that you are a soul. It may include realization of Paramatma, but the main goal is soul, Atma, one's own soul. In other words, self-realization. This is the goal of jnana. Brought about by different practices, including meditation, etc., and study of the Upanishads. With the idea of getting liberation from the material world, which is sayujya, that is merging into the impersonal aspect of the Lord. So, of course, there are many verses to that effect. It starts actually in the second chapter. The first part of that chapter is actually Jnana Yoga, understanding you are Atma, not body. And it continues in chapter 4 and 5 and 6 also. And it also continues in the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. generally, our acharyas have said that the first six chapters are Karma Yoga, the last six chapters are Jnana Yoga, and the middle six chapters are Bhakti Yoga. So therefore the Jnana appears in the first six chapters also, along with Karma Yoga, and it is predominantly Jnana Yoga in the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. So there are many verses to show that, but the remarkable thing that Krishna says here is that when you're practicing this Jnana Yoga to understand your Atma and to merge into God, he always mentions somewhere that one has to surrender to me and fix your mind on the Paramatma, etc. So in other words, the process of jnana cannot be also separated from recognition of the Lord, which I just said, if you don't recognize the Lord, you'll never get mukti or sayujya. You also have to recognize the Lord, even if you want to merge into God in the impersonal form. Still, you have to recognize the Supreme Lord. So the verses like that, tad buddhayas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad parayana gacantya punar avritam jnana nirduta kalmasa. Those whose intellect, mind, and faith are fixed on me, Paramatma, who are absorbed in glorifying and serving me, being washed of all ignorance by knowledge, never take birth again. So there's a emphasize that one should fix the mind on Paramatma. So, in the purport here, Vishwanath emphasizes the fact that none of these processes are independent of the process of devotion. So vidya reveals knowledge about the jivatma, not knowledge of the paramatma. And the Lord says, bhaktyaham ekaya grahya, I am obtainable only by bhakti. Therefore the jnanis must additionally practice bhakti in order to obtain knowledge of paramatma. That is stated in this verse. The word tat refers to the Supreme Lord, previously mentioned as vibhu in verse 15. Those who place their intelligence in the Supreme Lord, who are dedicated to contemplation on the Lord using intellect, who are meditating on the Lord using the mind, who fix their knowledge in the Lord, giving up sattvic knowledge of the soul separate from the body, and becoming fixed only in the Lord, becoming absorbed in the process of hearing and chanting about the Lord, do not attain birth again. So they also have to perform bhakti to the Supreme Lord in order to get their liberation from this material world. That's the jnani. So in chapter 6 especially, yoga is discussed. That is Ashtanga yoga. There are many, many verses like that also. Yunjan evam sadatmanam yogi niyata manasaha shanti nirvana paramamam matsamstan adigachati. Constantly engaging the mind in meditation, because his consciousness is devoid of sense objects, the yogi attains destruction of bondage, the platform of liberation, and merging into the impersonal Brahman can be attained. Continually engaging the mind in jnana yoga, because the consciousness is devoid of sense objects, he then attains the dissolution of samsara, in which supreme liberation can be attained, and in which there is continuous existence in my aspect as the impersonal Brahman. The result of sakama karma is svarga, the result of nishkama karma is jnana yoga, and the result of jnana and astanga yoga is nirvana moksha, or impersonal liberation. So these are the processes in which there has to be a little bhakti in order to accomplish the different goals, that is of karma and of jnana. Then there is what we will call mixed bhakti. These are not called bhakti, these processes. It's karma and jnana of various types, and yoga. If bhakti becomes more prominent, we go from, let's say, 3% bhakti to 60% bhakti or 70% bhakti. It's a big change. So therefore we can call bhakti yoga, because most of it is bhakti. But this is also distinct from pure bhakti, or ananya bhakti, or kevala bhakti. Kevala bhakti means only bhakti and nothing else. No other process, no other objects of worship, no other interests at all. So that's kevala bhakti, or ananya bhakti. So that is the highest. But it's also very rare. So there's also other types of bhakti, which Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll get various degrees of mixture of different things. We can get bhakti with karma yoga. That means there'll be some desires for material enjoyment. So that is, we see in chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions the four types of people that surrender unto the Lord. The person who wants relief from suffering, the person who is desiring wealth, the person who wants knowledge, and again, one who has attained some sort of knowledge. So these are all, none of them, even the Jnani there, is not the real Bhakta. These are all mixed. They're all mixed. In the Nectar of Devotion, there Rupa Goswami also mentions that these four types of people are not up to the level of Uttama Bhakti, which is what he discusses in the Nectar of Devotion. It's very Anyabhilashita Shunya. This is Uttama Bhakti. So these four are not at that level. So in other words, actually they don't attain prema in itself, those types of devotees. Krishna says, I accept them. But at the same time, they're not the highest types of devotee. So, we have these four types. And they can be classified also. The first three can be classified as having desires. They can be called karma misra bhaktas. They are bhaktas, and it's bhakti, but it is some mixture there. It is not karma yoga, because karma yoga is just a very little bit of recognition of the Lord. Here they are actually a lot of devotion, but they do have other desires. So they may do a little worship on the side of someone else, devatas or whatever, may have some other desires to fulfill. So therefore it's called karma misra bhakti. Vishwanath gives the name, this is called Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti, which means, we can say, a predominance of bhakti. And the other things like Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, he calls it Guni Bhuta Bhakti, which means it's this secondary process. Bhakti is a secondary process. So in these processes, with these four types of people, bhakti becomes the prominent process, and therefore Krishna says they are dear to me. And they're dearer than the karmis and the jnanis and the yogis. That is secondary bhakti. So the three of them are classified as karma misra bhaktas. And the last one, the jnani, is classified as jnana misra bhakta. The first three are sakama. They have material desires, whether it's knowledge or money or relief from distress. That is all sakama. The jnani does not have these desires, so it's nishkama. He is different from the other jnani. The other jnani was the one who practices, also recognizes the Lord, but he also wants liberation, atma-jnana and liberation. This person no longer aspires for that. His major interest is Supreme Lord. He worships the Supreme Lord. So his main interest is not just to get moksha. And of the four types, he has no material desire. Therefore, he's considered superior. And Krishna says of these four, the jnani is the best.
But what is his desire? It's a little bit
of the Supreme Lord, but it's neutral. So they get different results. Yeah. Well, because even the devotees have that. But in other words, the desire is not sense gratification. Not sense gratification. And it's not liberation also, because later in the same chapter, Vishwanath Chakravarti points out, I think the second to the last verse, he says, and here's another one, he says, another type of devotee, and it's mokshakama, one who wants moksha. He desires liberation, so he's also sakama. Even the one that wants liberation, he is sakama. He gives his desire for liberation. So that's another type of devotee. He's also a pradhani bhuta bhakta. He worships bhakta, but he wants liberation. So the jnani is considered, of those plus that one, he's considered to be superior in one sense. Because he doesn't have the desire But called Gyan Misra because he still has that influence of Jnana, what he previously practiced. In other words, his sadhana for a long time was Jnana, and to realize Atman, be peaceful, and come to Sattva Guru and get liberation. Then he switches somewhere along the line and becomes a devotee of the Lord. But that previous sadhana still influences, so his whole practice of bhakti has a little of this influence in it. And this will determine where he goes ultimately. So therefore, these people are devotees, and Krishna says, they come to me because they surrendered to some degree. But we will see that they get different goal from the pure devotee. So the pure devotee gets the best thing. He gets prema. And all the others don't get. All these other ones don't get up at that level. They get different degrees. But they get the Lord. So we'll wonder, how is that possible to attain the Lord in a personal form but not to have prema? That sounds a little bit of a contradiction, because usually if you realize God, then you get prema. But he says no, they don't. So this is rather interesting. It's an interesting fact. I don't know all the details of it, but I can just explain to the best of my ability. So, what is the result of these Sakama Bhaktas? The result of this bhakti is attainment of the respective desire. They will get freedom from suffering. They will get their money. They will get their knowledge. And after that, because of the superior nature of the object of their worship, in other words, they accept the Lord and that's their predominant activity, those devotees attain liberation in the form of Salokya. They get the same planet as the Lord with a predominance of Sukha and Aishwarya, happiness and, we can say, reverence of the Lord. This is their destination. And there's no fall down, as in the case of going to Svarga. So they attain that eternally. So they get Vaikuntha or whatever, Salokya. They get the same planet as the Lord. But they don't get prema. The result of the Gyan Mitsra Bhakta, that is the Gyani, who's superior to the others, is Shanta Rati. Rati means the same as Bhava. And Bhava is the sprout of prema. We have three types of bhakti, that is sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So the middle stage is the bhava bhakti, which is the result of sadhana bhakti. It is similar to prema, because one has a realization of the Lord, but it is not prema because it is not as intense and the relationship isn't fully developed with the Lord. So the rasas don't manifest fully. So that is the difference. So he has Shanta Rati. That's his attainment. As in the case of Sanaka, the four Kumaras, and others. However, by the mercy of the devotees and of the Supreme Lord, such a Gyanamisra Bhakta, if he gets proper association or whatever, he can go beyond that. He can also achieve prema. And the case is given of Sukadeva Goswami. He attained prema, even though he had come up to that level of Shatarati and realization of, Brahman and Atma, etc. And he went beyond that, and he got highest level of prema. So that's by the mercy of devotees. They can progress beyond that. But in itself, that Gyan Misra Bhakti only gets you Shantarati. It gives you like the beginning of prema, where you can say a little shadow of prema. Which, because he's better than that, he also goes to the spiritual world. The Sakama Bhaktas get Salokya. So therefore the Gyani must also get Salokya. And he has Shantarati. So that means that the other three will not get even Shantarati. They don't get that even. They don't get Rati. They get Sukha Aishwarya. They get some happiness in the spiritual world, etc. We will wonder, how is that possible that you can be in the spiritual world and not really have a relationship with the Lord? Or a developed relationship with the Lord. So one reason is because they do worship the Lord, and the Lord says, you come to me. if you worship me. So that part of the Lord fulfills his promise in that way. But because of that mixture, therefore they don't get a full relationship with the Lord. They get a partial relationship with the Lord. So the Gani is the best of them. He gets a relationship with the Lord, but it is very neutral. It is a relationship, and in Rakhi you can realize the Lord and see the Lord, but it is quite neutral. In, I think, the one of the Sundarbas, in Bhakti Sundarbha, I think it is, there, Jiva Goswami says that those who attain these types of liberation, except for Samipya, where you're close to the Lord, that is Salokya, Sarsti, and Sarupya, you go to the planet of the Lord, and you get a form like the Lord, and powers like the Lord, but generally you do not see the Lord person to person, only in meditation. So your only association with the Lord is with meditation and thought. You can associate with the Lord. So it's not even direct. So that's why you don't really get that level of, you know, prema. It's indirect in the spiritual world. So they get in the spiritual world, but they meditate and they see the Lord and associate with the Lord in that way.
That's,
yeah. Because of that mixture. They were so attached to that mixture, they didn't change. So the Lord rewarded them and they went. Of course, it is possible that one, these mixed devotees, they can also change within this material world. It's obvious. They can go from Sakama Bhakti to Nishkama to pure Bhakti. That's also possible, which is very fortunate if one does. But if one sticks to that, stubbornly sticks to that mixture, you can get your perfection and go to the spiritual world. But then you get that like neutral position there in the spiritual world. In which you get enjoyment, because you wanted enjoyment if you had Sakama Bhakti. So you get very happy. And you meditate on the Lord sometimes, and you can have a vision of the Lord, but you don't really have a personal relationship with Him. So the Lord fulfills His promise, and He also fulfills your desires. So you go to the spiritual world, you don't take birth and death, but your relationship is not that developed relationship of prema and ananda. That's what he says, yeah. Well, of course, it is possible, like as I said, that the Kumaras, they advance by association. Now, whether in the spirit, now, of course, when they're in the material world, they did this, yeah. They were in the edge of the spiritual world, they changed. if they're in the spiritual world, that I don't know, he doesn't say. Of course, anything is possible by the mercy of the Lord.
But that would mean that, you see, everyone was in the Swarup.
Yeah.
That means that
they're
Swarup.
It would seem so. Yeah.
That's a very strange type of
Swarup. Well, you get Salokya or Sarupya. Your Sarupa would be a form like Vishnu.
Yeah, but I mean, generally, it is understood that those who have Sarupa, they engage in service
from the Lord. Yeah, if you're in Dasya Rasa. But if you're not in Dasya Rasa, then you were in like Shantarati or something, then you wouldn't. It would be a very neutral relationship, like a yogi almost.
These people you described, they're not even in Shantarasa.
Yeah, they're a little below that. They're having Sukha Aishwarya, they're having a enjoyment. So it looks like if in the spiritual world you do get these like borderline cases, they're kind of on the edge of the spiritual world, you know, not participating in the Lord's Leela, actually. Yeah. He doesn't go into detail about what they do there, either here or in the Bhagavatam, either in any of the purports. He doesn't go into that, what is the nature of that Salokya, whatever. But probably if we look at the Sandarbhas, we'll find a little more detail. As I said, they meditate on the Lord, they don't get direct association with these Salokya, Sarupya, Sarsti. In Samipya, you actually see the Lord, but the others you don't. Which ones? These are Gita. Yeah. And as we'll see, it also comes up in his Bhagavatam Tika. In the very beginning, he mentions that also. In, I think, the first or second chapter of the 10th canto, he also mentions the same thing. So we do get examples. Anyway, So as it was pointed out, if you have sakama bhakti of the three types, it can become nishkama by association. And if it becomes nishkama, and you get gyan misra bhakti, and then you get this shantarati. But then again, even then, if you get shantarati, if you get association with devotees, you can get the prema also. So there's a possibility of progressing. And sometimes those that have karma or gyan misra bhakti, even without association in this lifetime, they'll also develop prema. That's because of previous lifetime they had some association or something, so that they can also develop. In any case, however, Vishnu Chakraparti says that this type of prema that they do get is pronominated by Aishvarya, reverential mood. So that means they don't actually get Raja Krishna. It'll be at most a Vishnu form or a very odd reverence form of the Lord. And the result of pure bhakti, unmixed with jnana, karma, or yoga, it's called ananya bhakti, or akinchana bhakti, or uttama bhakti, or kevala bhakti, is that what the result of that is that one becomes an associate of the Lord, and one directly sees the Lord and directly serves the Lord in prema, with dasya, sakya, vatsalya, or madhurya, rasa. So one gets a full manifestation of rasa through the process of uttama bhakti. So that is quite clear in the Nectar of Devotion, that his first definition is the definition of uttama bhakti, or pure bhakti. And then you have sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So uttama bhakti has three types. And most we'll all start at sadhana bhakti and then progress to bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. That's a normal process, and thus we get mercy. And then in prema bhakti, then you will get the manifestation of rasa. So that's what most of the Nectar of Devotion is about, from the second part of the ocean, the third part of the ocean, the fourth part. It's all the, you know, the rasa, discussion of rasa, once you get the prema. So that's also the full manifestation of bliss, prananda. So there's different examples. Of course, we have this, as I mentioned, there was Sukadeva and the Kumaras. An example of getting relief from distress, the famous example given is Gajendra. Gajendra was the elephant who was previously a king and got cursed to be an elephant, and he got attacked by the crocodile, and then the crocodile was biting his leg and whatever, and they were struggling in the water for 100,000 years with it, and then finally Gajendra remembered his prayers from the last lifetime, and he began reciting those prayers to get out of his miserable condition. And Vishnu and Vaikuntha heard those prayers and immediately came down on Garuda, and he chopped off the head of the crocodile and saved him. And what happened there? Well, what did he get? He got Sarupya Mukti as a result of that. He got a form like the Supreme Lord, got Vishnu form, and he went to his planet also. So that, and he got that type of liberation. An example of Artha Arthi, one who wants wealth, is a famous example of Dhruva. So Dhruva Maharaj had a desire for a big kingdom, bigger than his father's kingdom. That was his initial desire. And he had that desire all along until he saw Vishnu. And Vishnu gave him his darshan. And then he realized, oh, this is, that was a bad desire I had. Because having the Lord is much more. But anyway, the Lord insisted, you have to take the kingdom. You must, because you wanted that, I must give it to you. So therefore, Dhruva was forced to take the kingdom. And then he's forced to stay in the material world also. After, when he departed from this world, he got the eternal planet in the material world, Dhruva Loka, and he has to reside there on the supreme planet in the material world. So his desire of having some, you know, wealth and whatever and kingdom, etc., was rewarded by the Lord, and he ended up with this position of having, you know, a planet of his own, more or less, with the Supreme Lord on it. So he also got, we can say, Salokya and with the Lord. The Kumaras are an example of Jnanis who got Shantarati. They developed into, they became attracted to the Lord. That's described also in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto. The tulsi leaves, where the smell of the aroma of the tulsi manjaris came out on the breeze through the gates of Vaikuntha, and it went into the nostrils of the four Kumaras. And when they smelled that, then they began to get some ecstatic symptoms. So they changed from Jnanis into Bhaktas of sorts because of that. And they began to appreciate the beauty of the Lord. And it says there that they viewed the Lord's transcendental body again and again, and so they finally achieved meditation on the Lord's personal feature. So basically they would meditate on Him. An example of a Jnani in any frame of the, he mentions Sukadeva Goswami. Just discussed his description of the 12th canto, 12th chapter, paying obeisances to Sukadeva Goswami. It is he who defeats all inauspicious things within this universe. Although in the beginning he was absorbed in the happiness of Brahman realization, was living in a secluded place, giving up all other types of consciousness, he became attracted by the pleasing, most melodious pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. He therefore mercifully spoke this supreme Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the bright light of the absolute truth and which describes the activities of the Lord. So though he was fixed in the realization of Brahman, he actually began to relish the pastimes of the Lord, and he realized the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And thus when he spoke the Bhagavatam, it became even sweeter than Vyasadeva's, because his realization of Krishna was there. I forgot the Yoga Mr. Bhakta. Also, the Yoga Mr. Bhakta is discussed in chapter 8 of Bhagavad Gita, where it discusses how you concentrate on the Agya Chakra, withdraw yourself, your senses from sense objects, fix the prana on the Agya Chakra, absorb your thoughts in me, and utter the syllable Om, and remembering me, you attain my planet. So in this way, the yogi can also get salokya. Yeah, this is a mixture of bhakti with a little bit of yoga. So he gets salokya also. Then there is a little bit of a mixture. That is, Vishnu Chakravarti said, this is a mixture of nishkama karma and jnana with bhakti. And that's the famous sloka, yakrosi adasasi, whatever you offer, whatever you do, whatever tapasya you perform, you do it as an offering to me. So this is not pure bhakti also. but it's better than karma yoga. Why? Because you offer everything to the Lord. As in bhakti, we offer everything, so we offer everything to the Lord, new body, mind, words, all your activities, you do everything for the Lord. So in this type of activity also, you do everything to the Lord. In karma yoga, whether it's nishkama or sakama karma yoga, your prescribed activities go to the Lord. Certain activities, your duties of life, all the things that are prescribed by the shastras, that you do for the Lord. Other material things may not be within the range of the prescription. You don't offer those at all. But here he says, you offer everything to the Lord. Whatever you do, you offer to the Supreme Lord. So it's a little bit superior, and is direct offering to the Lord. So it's considered of a higher category. The reason that he says this, why Krishna says this, is because he's always telling Arjuna, well, you can't give up everything. because you're a kshatriya. So then first he says, do karma yoga and all that. Huh? But also karma yoga is indirect. And as I said, it only leads up to jnana. So it's also an inferior process. So because of that, but because Arjuna is supposed to be a kshatriya, therefore he doesn't want to say, okay, give up everything immediately. He does it at the very end of the Bhagavad Gita, but he doesn't do it now. In the middle of the Bhagavad Gita, he doesn't do that. So therefore he says, it's like karma yoga in that you do things, you don't give up activity, but you offer everything to the Lord. So it's a mixture of, let's say, almost surrender, complete surrender, but at the same time it's doing all sorts of activities. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this was a mixture of Nishkama Karma Yoga and Gyan, with the predominance of Bhakti. So what's the difference with Ananya Bhakti then? The difference is that in this form of activity, you do the activity and you offer to the Lord. And in Bhakti, Ananya Bhakti, you offer it and then do it. It's not you do the activity and then offer it. The offering is either simultaneous or before. You dedicate everything before you even do it to the Lord. That is Bhakti, real Ananya Bhakti. When you do the activity and offer it all to the Lord, then it is a little different. So you do the activity and you offer it to me. This is what is stated here. But you do all your activities like that, then it's superior to Karma Yoga. So this is the stage which leads to pure bhakti. That is Ananya bhakti. So this is the highest form. It's discussed mainly in the middle six chapters. There are some verses in chapter 7, some verses in chapter 8, some verses in chapter 9 and 10 and 12, which discuss this Ananya bhakti. And of course, at the end, then again, we finally get Savardharam Partijamamikam Saranam Prasa again at the very end. So all of these are pure bhakti. So the first verse which indicates this is the first verse of chapter 7. Maya sakta mana parta yogam yunjan mad asraya asamsaya samagamamya taitya sasi tatshrinu. So that is the my asakta mana parta and mad asraya. You take shelter of me and you attach your mind to me completely. And establish a relationship with me. Yoga myunjan. And surrender to me, mad asraya. You will know me in my complete form without doubt. So then he discusses after that the whole process of pure bhakti. So the main point is that he promises a relationship with the Lord. Yogam yunjan. You establish a relationship with me. So this is the main point there. And then in other verses, he says, ananya cheta satatam, ananya cheta. Ananya means nothing else. No other. So that means no other process. It's not karma, jnana, yoga, nisra. It's only bhakti process. No other object of worship except the Supreme Lord. No devatas, nothing else. No other desires for enjoyment of any sort. So it's only for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And no other processes, no other goals, no other objects at all. So that is what Ananya means. So when one practices that process, only bhakti for the Supreme Lord, for his pleasure alone, that is considered the best, that is bhakti. And with that, then you get relationship with the Lord. So it says, Ananya Cheta Satram, Yomam Smarati Nitya Saha, Tasya Ham, Sulabha Parta, Nitya Yuktasya Yoginaha. The devotee who remembers me daily at all times without deviation to other processes, persons or goals, and who desires association with me easily attains me. So this is Ananya Bhakti. I'll just read his purport here. Having spoken of Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti, that is where Bhakti is prominent, but it's got mixture. Bhakti mixed with karma, mentioned in Jigyasa Artati, and with a desire for liberation in Jara Marana Mokshaya, that is 29th verse of chapter 7. And also Bhakti mixed with yoga in chapter 8. Now the Lord speaks of Kevala Bhakti, the best Bhakti devoid of any material tinge. The mind of that devotee is free from performing other processes, karma or jnana yoga, free from worship of persons or devatas, free from other goals such as attainment of svarga or moksha. Thus he's called Ananya Cheta, with mind not thinking anything except the Lord. He remembers me every day, constantly, not depending upon appropriate time, place, person, or purity. I can be easily attained by that person, by that bhakti. It is not mixed with the difficulties encountered in practicing yoga or jnana or other processes. He constantly desires association with me, nitya yogdasya. Yogina here refers to the person doing bhakti yoga. Or it means a person who has a relationship or yoga with the Lord in dasya, sakya, or vatsalya, or madhurya. So, this is the highest type of bhakti, and the result is one gets that relationship with the Supreme Lord. Okay. Any questions so far?
For people who have questions, I'll just mic to them.
I think it's recording, that's fine.
We're not in a good stadium.
Yes.
Small room.
What if the devotee is more meditating on pleasing the guru instead of pleasing Krishna? His meditation is not so much on Krishna, but more on the spiritual master.
Well, in actually, in the Nectar Devotion, there where it describes the process of Uttama Bhakti, you serve only the Lord. And then Rupa Goswami also, not the commentary, I think it is, Krishna says that also it includes the devotee of the Lord, serving the devotee of the Lord. And then he also mentions in relation to the Angas of Bhakti when he discusses 64 types of Bhakti, that these can also be applied not only to the Lord, but to the devotee of the Lord. Okay? So in other words, here in Jani, remember, he can also be there for glorifying the devotee of the Lord also. However, we cannot separate them. In other words, we cannot say, I'll worship the Guru and not worship Krishna. That's also absurd. Because the order of Guru is you should worship Krishna. So if you don't follow the order of Guru and worship Krishna, then you're going against his order. So if we're going to worship Guru, that's fine, but we cannot also reject the worship of the Supreme Lord. So in other words, you can't separate them. The two things will have to go together.
In connection with her question, could it be said then that depending upon the level of bhakti that Guru Maharaj has achieved, then the disciple then will be a shareholder in that, but he or she cannot achieve a higher level of bhakti than what that Guru has achieved? If you're worshipping a Guru, and a Guru is on a certain level in his bhakti, maybe he has ananya, the disciple will only achieve the level of bhakti that the Guru has achieved, correct?
That is a general, that's a general thing. However, we'll see that there are cases where, for instance, in the relation of the Dhruva story, that Dhruva surpassed his mother, because the mother was the first Guru, but he surpassed her. But then he took her with him, obviously, to the spiritual world also.
But his mother was a Vakvartan Pradashika Guru.
Yeah.
Not Diksha Darshiksha Guru. True. His real Guru was Narada Muni.
Yeah.
He gave
him
mantra and engaged him in worship.
But even then, would we say that the mantra Guru is superior to the Shiksha Guru? Not in all cases.
No, but Narada also was a Shiksha Guru.
True. But I'm saying in other cases it may not be. Your Diksha Guru may be one thing. So he may be at a certain level, but then you may have a Shiksha Guru who may be in a higher level also, and he may also do something for you. So it's not that one is restricted by one Shiksha Guru if he's limited on a certain level, because by the mercy of Krishna and your own desires, spiritual desires or whatever, Krishna will make arrangements for you to progress.
Okay? And I think Prabhuji, he asked particularly about the, was it one's Guru is Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru, but does that mean that, you know, according to the level of his realization, the disciple will progress?
That's a general principle.
Yeah, even if he has not only Diksha Guru, but Shiksha Guru, who is a higher realization, but still,
then one is limited by that. Because we'll see that, for instance, in the Nectar of Devotion, it says, how does one get bhava by association with people who have bhava? How do you get prema from bhava? If you're on bhava stage, how do you get the prema by association with people on prema level? But generally, that is the process. The other process, of course, is mercy of Krishna himself. In certain cases, Krishna will also, I will give you intelligence from within, the Dhanagum Yogam Tam. So Krishna can also do that. So that's another thing there. So we can't say only, you know, you have to take that guru because he's superior and you get to that level, whatever. Krishna's also there. So the two things are both there, you know. But for practical purposes, generally, yes. That's why one should choose one's guru on a certain level if one wants to attain that level. And one should be, let's say, introspective enough to choose the proper guru. If he's on a very low level, then one will be limited by that, and then we'll have to go to another guru, whatever.
Maharaj, from your talk, can one understand that those devotees who practice in Ishkan or Krishna Consciousness Movement, that they, once taking that path, can only get to the ultimate goal? Or, because my question was, is that is everyone who partakes in our movement ultimately meant to go to the highest goal, or is it that, do you understand what I mean? Is it?
Well, we can say generally yes, because our teachings are such that we're pointing out worship of Radha and Krishna, you know, Krishna is the highest, etc. Like that. But we'll see, like, for instance, in Lord Chaitanya's movement, all people weren't worshipping Krishna. We'll have worshippers of Rama there. And Lord Chaitanya did not change them into Krishna worshippers, as Murari Gupta and Anupam, the brother of Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Rupa. He was a Ram Bhakta, and he never changed. He could not change. So the Lord said, okay, don't change. Even if one's fixed in a certain relationship, then one may not be worshipping Radha Krishna ultimately also. And of course we have Madhurya Rasa as the highest, but then all people may not also be worshipping that. Because we have within Lord Chaitanya's movement, we have Nityananda and we have his associates. They were in Sakya Rasa, not in Madhurya Rasa. So you get, you know, all variations within the big movement. If the persons have that bhava, then they do that. Of course, in like Griya Bhagavatam, this guy is also a puri in the spiritual world, a Jagannath puri. So if you worship Jagannath, you go to Jagannath in the spiritual world. Could go there. I don't see any examples of that. I don't see any classic examples of that. Maybe if we read deeper, we will find, but I don't know. I can't recall right now.
Okay.
Well, is that a real example? It's like he didn't really change. He just went through everything, but he knew it wasn't for him. In other words, one is passing through like a tourist, and one is looking at the places. But that's not really that one got fixed in that form and then changed it, you know, like that. Yeah. As far as rasa and prema, I would think not. You could never change that. As far as these other ones, perhaps they could change from the neutral rasa, the shanta, rati, and all that. Perhaps they could change. But as far as once you're fixed with like a dasya, sakya, prema, then you wouldn't. Because that would be like your constitutional, your sthayi bhava, your permanent, you know, sarupa.
Yeah. if you didn't reach the Lord yet,
then possibly you could. Yeah. I haven't heard of anything like that. It would seem possible to me if that wasn't fully developed or whatever. And then he went to, Sakya went to Madhurya. Yeah. But we don't know if that was his eternal, it was sadhana maybe. Was it sadhana or was it perfection?
Of course
it was sadhana. So it was sadhana. He changed to sadhana, so obviously he wasn't at the perfect level then, and then he switched. But that's always possible, to change the sadhana. Well, generally you get perfected in this material world first. That's a general process. And Prabhupada even mentioned you'll go to some loka where Krishna has his pastimes, and that will be your first entrance into the pastimes. And you get born into a family of gopas. Otherwise, you suddenly appear in the spiritual world and say, well, where do you come from? Who's your mother? And I don't know. It would be very peculiar. So you get born into the gopa community. In this material world, because they have birth in the material world. You see, everyone is born. Krishna is born. Everyone else is born. So you get born in that way. Once you got your position, your relationship, then you go to the spiritual world. However, there's another great secret, and that is, Vishnu says actually the lila in the material world is superior to the spiritual world. So if you attain a position in the material world, you may not want to, and with the eternal lila of Krishna, when he manifests his lila here, that is superior. So therefore, we would never want to leave that.
How is this?
Well, we'll discuss that.
It's not ever mentioned that someone may be, desiring to stay in the material world.
Well, it's not material world because spiritual world because you're always with Krishna.
Yeah,
but when he has his lila in them, in
but
his lila. Well, here you see, I read in the first thing here, it also appears here. I, because I am the Lord, about making them my associates with them, I appear and disappear in this world at the appropriate time. When I come as avatar form, then they will come with me in order to give my birth and pastimes an eternal nature. So they will attain me, and then they will come with me at all times as my eternal service in this material world when I appear as avatar. So that's possible also.
Good
also, yeah. Yeah, that's also there because we'll also discuss this in relation to Nanda and Yasoda. Because they appear in the material world, but simultaneously they're also eternal associates of art and spiritual world. We can't say they're not there. And that these other forms were actually umsas, when they were performing austerities, and not actually the full form of Nanda and Yasoda in previous births.
So how does that relate to the fact that we're supposed to understand that the material world is temporary, but then if Krishna is saying that he eternally manifests his pastimes here, then the material world isn't really temporary as such?
Well, his lila is eternal, even though this is the great mystery, which he discusses that in the Bhagavad, his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita Vishnu's talk where he discusses that how is it possible that Krishna can be eternal, but yet he is born and continually born in the material world, and he grows also. He visibly grows, and we can't say he didn't grow, because he was a little baby and he grew up and he passed through different stages, and yet he's supposed to be unchanging. And he's supposed to be unborn. So how do we say that? We just say it's not true, or else it is true and he does change. So how are you going to accommodate these contradictions? So one who is a real devotee will bridge that contradiction and understand that he is eternal at the same time he is changing, and he has a birth and he doesn't have a birth. He's unborn and he also is born. And one who can understand that will appreciate Krishna and his pastimes on this earth, and then enters into those pastimes.
pastimes is always going on, and you go to one class to another, like one class to another.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for example, the pastime of Putana, when Krishna liberated Putana, then Putana
She got sarupya, or she got a form of a nurse in the spiritual world.
But then, the pastime of Krishna and Putana keep going on.
No, they'll be different. In other words, Krishna's pastimes are eternal, and his associates, his favorable associates, they will generally be the same. But of course, there's variation there also. Yeah, so Krishna will appear in another universe and perform his pastimes again, but not necessarily the same, obviously the same demons, because there'll be different jivas to take those roles. So there'll be different jivas. Then no Kamsa, somebody else is there, and he'll take, maybe be like Kamsa or whatever, another big demon or whatever. And same like Jaya and Vijaya were there, but it's not the Jaya and Vijaya keep falling down from the spiritual world and take big births also. That would be very bad for them, you know, so. That was an exception, so there won't be those Jaya Vijaya coming in every time into the material world also, as Kamsa, etc.
Only the eternal associates, they will go, they always manifest, if Krishna, when that lila you manifest, like because that you read there, that the eternal associates, they always come to Krishna in that particular pastime, like Arjuna, he always, I don't know how to explain, like, one pastime or one incarnation from Krishna, and certain associates will go with that pastime for that incarnation, then they always
want to. We can say there's a general rule, but we say the pastimes are not always the same pastimes. There's always going to be variations. Just like Krishna will have his pastimes, the daily pastimes in the spiritual world every day. He has eight parts of the day, and he has certain pastimes there. And so they give a description of these pastimes, the daily pastimes. But it's not the same every day. There's a generally, okay, Krishna goes out in the field and herds the cows, but there's different pastimes taking place in that period every day. Yeah, it would be very boring if everything happened the same. So this, in other words, it's variegated within that sort of setup. Everything is very variegated. It's astounding at all times, and it's newer and newer and newer and newer every day. It goes on in the same way, but it gets newer things. So when we have the 10th canto, we have some of the pastimes of Krishna. Even this isn't all of his pastimes, because obviously there's gaps of what happened. You know, there's Krishna has his Govardhan Leela, and then 1 year goes by, and then after that, the next year he does the Rasa. There's a whole, skipping a whole year there. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So he's doing pastimes there also, which aren't even described. So there are some outstanding pastimes which are described here. But that's not all the pastimes either. When Krishna appears in another universe, he has other pastimes. So and he may have other associates also to participate in those pastimes.
It's mentioned that even those pastimes which are repeating themselves, like for example...
Oh, Rasa Lila will always be repeating it, in one sense.
Yeah, and I'm also killing different things like subduing the Kaliya demon, for example. It's explained that in different millenniums, Krishna will descend and the same beautiful Lila, but in different, slightly different manner.
Mm-hmm.
Like it says that in one of his incarnations, Krishna, he put a rope in Kaliya's nose and started crying
and
he was a slave. In another time, he was making the whole Rasa Lila dance on one of Kaliya's hooves.
So it's
also, it's not like a God is some kind of a robot.
Yeah. And even if he has similar lilas, there will be variations there. Even if you have a similar demon, another Kaliya or whatever, it will be different. I think also Jiva Goswami says in relation to the six first sons of Devaki and all that, how they were put in the womb and killed by Kamsa. And they were the sons of Kalanemi. Kalanemi sons? Yeah, Kalanemi sons, yeah? Who were originally Brahma's sons, Marichi's sons. Marichi's sons, who was the son of Brahma. And they laughed at. They criticized Brahma, and then they became the grandsons of Hiranyakasipu. And then they got cursed by Hiranyakasipu, and then they became killed in the womb by Kamsa. Like that. So he says that also could be cultivated, that it happened a different way in a different cycle of time, whatever that means. Similar persons, but a different father or something. Yes.
I haven't read books like called Gopal Champu, I think, and Ananda Varnana Champu. But do these books contain pastimes other than the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Song? For instance, the metta bordering that lapse.
Well, Ananda Vrindavan Champu basically covers what the Bhagavatam covers, with slightly different details. As for Gopal Champu, that I don't know. I think there's also more details added, but generally the same pastime. You know about that?
Yeah.
Basically, it's an expansion of the pastimes. The reason it's different is in the sense is that it's a literary work, and they're in those champus are in prose. They're not in poetry, not in verse form, and they're very ornate. There are exhibitions of different poetic devices they use there in different ways to enhance the lila.
And also there are much more details.
Yeah, different details.
But some of them are just directly relations of Jiva
Goswami's
heart.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing spiritual world is described. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I think the time's up too. We don't have these sheets. Anyway, next time we move. I gave a little summary here of that stuff at the end. And then what I do, I just quoted different passages from Bhagavatam, from different Leelas, to illustrate some of the relationships with Krishna and how Krishna interacts with his devotee. That will be the rest of the course. Okay, any questions?